The Business Buzz Podcast.
The Business Buzz with Mudiwa Mock Justice Gabaza.
Good evening and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on ViaFM. That's 88.1, broadcasting live from our studios right here in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Mudiwa Mock Justice Gabaza and I'll be your host for today. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, before we get into the main topic, one of the big stories to come out business-wise this week has been the stepping down of Absa CEO. Very interesting development. A lot of people didn't expect it. And I think more than anything else, what's been interesting on that front is just the fact that you had someone like Daniel Minele, who recently came in, to step into that role, right? And according to the reports and the statements that came out of the bank, the separation was caused by quote-unquote divergent professional views and approaches related to its strategy and culture transformation, the bank said when the news broke on Tuesday. Very shocking. And I think there are just two things, for me. I'm not a bank expert, I'm not a bank analyst, and I'm not a banking executive, but just from the outside in, it really does seem like an inopportune time to have the CEO of Absa stepping down, especially at a time when Absa has lost as much ground as it has in the local market, firstly, and especially when you look at the rise of other banking counterparts such as Capitec, together with the digital banks such as Time, and now you have Discovery Bank as well, right? So all of these competitors coming into the market, it's no longer just about the big four. It's about how do you compete, right now. And to have right now sitting at about the fourth CEO in a space of 2 years doesn't really bode well for investor confidence. And that was reflected in the share price drop immediately after the announcement was made on Tuesday. But the second one, I guess, is just about, culture versus a working strategy, because I'm sure there's a certain way in which things have always been done at Absa, and probably Daniel, having been the Deputy Reserve Bank Governor, sort of had line of sight of what was going on at Absa, but sort of from a high level. And in his gardening leave, after leaving the Reserve Bank and, in that transition period, probably started seeing, where some of the cracks internally were at Absa. And when he came in, there was likely a realization that the strategy in place or what was going on would not work, and that some things were going to have to change. It wasn't just a matter of continuing the strategy that was developed before, and I think he probably met a lot of resistance because of that. So it's very sad to see the man leave, because at the end of the day, when you look at the competitive landscape, it's hard to deny that from a confidence point of view, it really doesn't bode well for Absa when you're competing in an industry, at least amongst the big banks, where you look at the likes of Jacques at FNB, who's been there since 2013 2014, Sim Shabalala been in place at Standard Bank for almost a decade now. At the same time, you've got people like Mike Brown, who's probably been serving as the longest serving CEO of the big four banks. So looking at things from that point of view, succession planning is important, and there's a big void that's been left at Absa, and we wait to see what's going to happen on that front. Otherwise, for today, as we move into the show, we're going to be talking about the business of vaccines, and to help us to navigate through the topic, we're going to be hearing from Professor Jenny Rousseau, who is from Wits Business School, together with Pilani Mplongo, a fifth-year medical student at Wits University, just to hear around what's actually going on the side of the business of the vaccine. Otherwise, for the rest of the hour, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's when we get into the week's top trending business and economics news. And, for today, we are going to be hearing from Zanele Kunene, and then we get into the Buffalo Index, where we tell you the state of your your 100 Rand. Now, remember that you can get in touch with us, engage with us on everything that we're talking about on Facebook. We have our VFM or Voice of Wits. You can find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VFM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also stream the station live on VFM.co.za. And remember that you can find our podcasts on all the major platforms. That's Spotify, that's Apple Podcasts, together with Google Podcasts as well. Otherwise, you can head on over to iono.fm and find our landing page for all our great content. So that's how the show is looking like. On the other side of this, we get into the business wrap.
Gram Squad vibes are a real thing. So follow at VOFM on Instagram and light up your feed. Business Wrap with Zanele Kunene.
In our business wrap, we give you the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by Zanele Kunene, who is a financial advisor at BDO Wealth Advisor South Africa, to give us some insight into what's been happening in and around the economy. Zanele, good evening to you.
Hello. How are you doing, Mediwa?
No, doing all right on this end. What have you been keeping an eye on, or, you know, what's interesting, or what should our listeners be paying attention to at the moment?
So at the moment, I've been noticing that quite a lot of people are moving into the gig economy. Apparently, that's what it's called. So we're having an uptake in a lot of freelancers, and I've been having quite a few conversations with them in terms of our client meetings. And I just thought this would be the great, my word, this would be a really good platform for me to share a couple of tips on people who are freelancers and things that they should consider, especially when it comes to personal financial management. These are things that have just been popping up within the conversations, and I think that it would be quite helpful. So let me get right into it. So my first tip, if you're a freelancer, would be to create an emergency fund. I know it's quite daunting, the idea of you building an emergency savings account that is worth 3 to 6 months worth of your expenses. It's quite daunting, but you have to become, you know, a little bit creative about it. And this is what I've been telling people, be slightly creative about it. And an idea I could share with you is pay things forward, especially if you are renting. You already know how long your lease is for, how much you owe your landlord. Add a little extra every month when you're paying your rent, so that by the 8th to 9th month, all your income you could use your income as a lump sum into your emergency fund. You know, you're just loosening up some funds. So that's the way you could do it. You could look at how much you qualify for in terms of your credit facility. I'm not saying go and get credit and go and apply for everything. Just find out how much you qualify for, because you might qualify for an amount that is worth 3 to 6 months worth of your expenses, and at least you know that there's somewhere where you can go if you do have an emergency. But in the meanwhile, keep on building up your emergency fund pockets. Just be a bit creative about it. It's not just about having money in one place, it's about securing your whole your life, basically. The second tip that I'm a big believer in, this one, is to manage your risk. All right, manage your risk against income disability. Manage your risk against. I'm so sorry. It's been a long week. Oh my word.
No worries. No worries. Let's do this thing.
Let's do this. So the second tip is to manage your risk against sickness, illness, critical illness, and that, as well as against disability, be it permanent or temporary, all right? And the reason why this is so important is you don't want to be in a situation where any of these life events happen to you and you don't have any way to supplement, not even to supplement your income, but to meet your expenses. So a temporary income disability will pay up to 0 to 24 months. A permanent disability will pay you from claim stage up until the age of 65. And your critical illness cover, that covers like your cancers, your heart attacks, and so forth, will pay out a lump sum. And it's important to get this, to understand that your income disability will pay a monthly income. And your severe or critical illness cover will pay a lump sum out. All right, so it will help you to adjust your life the way it needs to be, to pay off your home, pay off your car, or pay off any of those expenses. So the question must be, how does the insurer then determine what my income is? Because I'm a freelancer, I get money here, there, and everywhere. So what they will do is that they will look at your income for the past 12 months, all right? And then they will average that out. Some of them will average your sales against your costs for the past 12 to 36 months, depending on your insurer. They will look at your bank statements. They will look at your bus returns. Just a quick note on your returns. I know some freelancers think that they're not earning that much to register for their tax, but do register for tax, guys. There's a whole lot of benefits. You're going to have to do it because you and I both know that you are amazing. The universe is aligning. Your clients are coming in. Your business is going to grow. So you need to have a tax number to ensure that it does grow.
Yes, yes, so yes. We receive.
Do the right thing.
We receive.
And you're receiving.
Yes.
And my third and final tip is build your retirement savings in a retirement savings vehicle. I know that there are plenty of vehicles out there, but unit trust, you've got tax-free accounts, you've got all these vehicles there, but please do use a retirement savings vehicle, such as a retirement annuity. And this is why. It, within a retirement annuity, any growth that happens there cannot be taxed. Any growth will not be taxed, all right? So funds is not going to come for you. Another thing is you can deduct how much you're contributing to your retirement annuity, okay? And the limitations are as follows. You can contribute up to 27.5% of your taxable income, or you can contribute $350,000, the lesser of the two. So imagine getting that deduction. Guys, you do want to participate. You do want to make sure that you are using these vehicles to increase your wealth, all right? And another reason why I'm saying use a retirement annuity is because it reinforces the purpose of this, of why you are investing or why you are saving, because you will not be able to access those funds up until the age of 55. So it's reinforcing the purpose, it's keeping you disciplined, and you're also getting a tax deduction because all of us are going to register and we're going to do the right thing. We're going to be law-abiding citizens. And those are my three top tips if you are a freelancer. And if you want to, like, expand on this conversation, do get in contact with me on my LinkedIn page or check out our BDO South Africa website. We've got some amazing content that you guys can pull from over there.
Zanele, actually, before we let you go, I was actually a freelancer, you know, for some time, and I actually still do engage here and there. And one of the things that, you know, I think is an interesting one, and maybe you might have some tips for us, is some people will register a company, you know, through which they're, you know, if you do work and you have clients, your money will go there. Some people stay as just, you know, themselves when they're doing all of this work. Are there any benefits or, you know, disadvantages, or is it pretty much the same thing?
So there's definitely advantages and disadvantages to how you register as a taxpayer. So you could either be a sole proprietor, a company. I don't think a CC anymore, but you could register as different types of a taxpayer, but you also need to be aware of the disadvantages and advantages which will be suitable to your position. So that's very important for you to have a conversation with your tax consultant, and you'll be able to see which advantages and disadvantages what is happening with my English today? I have no idea.
I'll help you out. I think you're about to say was which tax registration is suitable for you.
Exactly. And you'd be able to see which one suits you. And also, as a freelancer, there are some clients that you have that will probably withhold 25% of the income or 25% of how much they are paying you. So that 25% at least shows you that you are paying something forward to SARS. So when you do have to submit your things, at least you have paid something forward. You know, you don't have to now just, you know, work out this huge calculation of how much you owe them. So do register for tax and find out which registration would suit your business and place you in a better position.
So that's been it with Zanele Kunene, who is our financial planner from BDO Wealth Advisors, giving us some insight into one of the growing trends in and around the market, and that is gig economy work. I think I remember seeing a report that came out. I need to be corrected, but I think it was out of Old Mutual, and they were saying that about 23% of South Africans, so that's one in four South Africans, you know, roughly, are participating now in the gig economy, and it's been on the rise in the last year, especially because people have been losing their jobs, so that you know, finding work to do, people have been finding other ways of supplementing their income. So very important one to have. On the other side of this, we get into the state of your 100 rand in our Buffalo Index.
Business Wrap with Zanele Kunene. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
In our Buffalo Index, we seek to tell you the state of your 100 rand. And for today, we are looking at the cost of vaccines, because the show is about the business of vaccines. And for today, because of that, we looked at some of the top vaccines. As you know, the COVID-19 vaccine at the moment is free, you know, for most people, depending on what country you're in. But in South Africa, that is the state of affairs. But for other types of vaccines, right, the most requested vaccines, it's seems are the yellow fever vaccine. If you've ever found yourself traveling to regions such as East Africa, you definitely always need to have that, and that's going to set you back about 7 buffaloes or 680 rand. The other common vaccine that people are getting is the influenza vaccine, or the flu shot, as some people call it, and that's coming in for about 1 buffalo. So it means your 100 rand can get you a shot on that vaccine, because that's coming in at about 95 rand. There are a range of different vaccines out there, but some of the most notable ones, especially on the high end, the most expensive being the shingles vaccine, and that's going to set you back about 19 buffaloes or 1,863 rand. Some other notable ones is that hepatitis A, the A and B combo, is about 5 buffaloes or 400 rand. And then the other one that's interesting is that, you know, the one for HPV is another one that's for 10 buffaloes or 1,000 rand. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we get into the main topic.
The Business Buzz with Modiwa Mob Justice Kabaza.
It's time for us to get into our main topic. As I said at the start of the show for today, we are talking about the business of vaccines, because that is the big thing at the moment. We've had you know, people like Dr. Zweli Mkhize, who has confirmed that the rollout of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that was announced you know, earlier this week, I think, will resume. This comes after the suspension of the rollout after an alleged blood clot caused by the vaccine. So for today, we're going to be looking at the role of business on the side of the vaccine. And to start things off, we are joined by Jenny Rousseau, who is a professor of economics and head of the School of Economics and Business Sciences at the University of the Witwatersrand, that is Wits University. Prof, greetings to you.
Good evening to the listeners. And for the record, let me just state that I've now moved on. I'm now a professor at Wits Business School.
Professor at Wits Business School. Thank you so much for that. And we do acknowledge that that correction. I think a good place for us to start then is, how would you rate the growth at the moment in the pharmaceutical industry before the pandemic hits, and how do you sort of see it now? You know, because they really seem to be at the fore. It's just one of those things that we can't, you know, deny or, you know, run away from at the moment.
Yes, indeed, we see growth in the pharmaceutical industry. We see the development of new vaccines. You've mentioned the shingles vaccine, for instance. So there are new vaccines being developed. And, of course, the pharmaceutical industry will grow as the population grows, because there are more people with a growing population in need for the services of the pharmaceutical industry.
And the country, you know, will need a lot of money to, you know, if they want to speed up the rollout. Do you think that at the moment there is enough funding, and, you know, should there be a proposal to be increasing taxes? How do you think, you know, the government has been coping when it comes to this? Because we do understand that the country is under a lot of financial strain. There's been, you know, a lot of revisions to the budgets, you know, under collection and all of that. Can we afford to be inoculating the population?
You make a very, very valid point. We must remember that nothing is free in any economy. What is free to one person is simply paid for by another group of people or by someone else. Our government finances are unfortunately under a lot of strain owing to the mismanagement of the country under the Zuma administration. And for years under the Zuma administration, economic growth was lower than the population growth. So on a per capita basis, all South Africans became poorer. Now, the government in the end has to make choices. And unfortunately, our government is making the wrong choices. To give you one example, the government is using funds to keep SAA as an airline. Of course, it's a vanity project of the ANC government. And all the funds that's been pumped into SAA could have been used for things like vaccines, could have been used for things like subsidized education for students at universities, etc. So our government, with limited funds, makes wrong policy choices. The government should have closed SAA 5 or 6 years ago. It would have released a lot of money for things like vaccines, education, etc. Incidentally, recently the government has reallocated funds from education to help SAA.
It certainly does sound, you know, from what you're saying, that as taxpayers, we are the ones that end up footing the bill for, you know, as you've described, some of the faltering, some of the faults that come from bad policy decisions and implementation thereof from that end. A bit on the positive, do you think, you know, outside of actually funding the vaccine, if people do, you know, get vaccinated, does that help us in any way when it comes to, I guess, job creation, opening up more, and I guess just getting more and more economic activity going?
Yes, indeed. Vaccination is always exemplary in the sense that a more healthy population will put less pressure on the health resources of the government. And through vaccination, less people will fall ill, hence a more healthy population, more people will be able to work. Please, I must add, if they can find work. And at the same time, there will be less pressure on the health infrastructure in South Africa, because ill people, sick people need health services.
And the other one, I guess, just as an extension to, you know, that question, you know, where do you sort of see some of that activity happening? Because we started off the conversation talking about the pharmaceutical industry. So if, you know, if one is creating jobs, is it sort of more towards those types of industry, or sort of, I guess, clawing back what was already lost, and sort of the people that were in mining or maybe manufacturing, getting those jobs back online?
Well, we need jobs over there. Big spectrum in South Africa. We need all possible jobs that we can get, because we need South Africans employed on an urgent basis. There's no doubt about that. And in order to do this, the government must go on a process of less regulation in the economy, making it easier for business to operate in South Africa, thus creating necessary jobs for South Africans. We cannot have a situation where we expect the government to do everything or to control everything. I often get the feeling that the government wants to control, regulate everything, and when it stops moving, it wants to start subsidizing it. It's a wrong economic model. The government should allow much more space for the private sector, and specifically for entrepreneurs.
Speaking of the private sector and the market, there are plans to have some of the vaccines being produced locally in South Africa. And, you know, all things be equal and market forces, you know, allowing, would you see that type of situation perhaps making it a bit cheaper, you know, for the country to actually inoculate its population as opposed to the importing that is currently being done?
Well, I've not seen price comparisons, so it's difficult to speculate on whether it will be cheaper or not, but it will be positive for our economy to produce vaccines here. Well, certainly it will lead to more investment in our economy, and certainly it will result in more employment in our economy, and I'm all for employment in our economy. We need to get employment opportunities for South Africans. So irrespective of possible price differentiation or difference between imported and local vaccines, the positive aspect is producing locally will create jobs locally.
All right. No, thank you so much. That was us with Professor Jenny Rousseau, who is from Wits Business School, giving us some insight into some of the economics that are driving the vaccine in and around South Africa. Just highlighting what's going on that front, saying that there are better ways in which the government could be spending its money, for example, instead of trying to save or subsidize South African Airways, for example. We could be pouring that type of money into things like vaccine, and instead of taking money out of things like education, there's so much more that the country could be doing. So policymakers really do need to come to the fore when it comes to this front. And he just ends off talking about what's going on in terms of manufacturing, saying that, you know, it would be possible, but a list of prices would have to be released for us to make a fair assessment just around whether or not local production of the vaccine will result in actually cheaper prices being realized by consumers, because at the end of the day, like you said at the beginning, someone is paying. On the other side of this, we continue with the show. This is the Business Buzz.
COVID Biz Watch. COVID Biz Watch on the Business Buzz.
In our COVID Business Watch, we look at the impact of COVID-19 on businesses in and around South Africa. You know, for today, we are happy to be joined on the line by Tseko Fatso Motswai, who is the co-founder or co-owner of Urban Nature. We're just going to be hearing about that. They are a black female-owned and run business specializing in customized gifts, mainly wallets, wood watches, and sunglasses. So, Tseko Fatso, greetings to you.
Hi, how are you?
No, doing all right on this end. Thank you so much for being with us. We just want to understand the effect of COVID on your business, and maybe beginning by understanding what lessons, you know, from a business point of view, have you actually learned from operating your business during COVID-19?
Okay, thank you for having us. The biggest lesson was our presence online. Before COVID, we were online, but we didn't have that much presence. So with not being able to do markets or events, we really had to leave a footprint. We had to engage more online. We ended up even setting up an online store just to attract new customers.
And the other one is, because of those lessons that you've learned, you said that you now have that online presence. Do you think it's going to help, or has it helped your business to thrive? And do you think it will help your business to thrive in the future and going forward?
It really has helped us to thrive better than before. Because remember now, with lockdown, everybody was home. People were on their phones more. There was no going to work. Not everybody was working from home. Yeah, both. So it gave us an opportunity for people to get to know us, to get to know about us and what we actually do as a company.
For people that, you know, are perhaps thinking about their own businesses and how their experiences have been, you know, through COVID-19. How are you thinking about that? Like, what would you have done differently? Because you've told us what you learned, but like, what would you have done differently had you, you know, if you had an opportunity to do it all again?
Okay, the thing was the initial lockdown, the first 5 months, the struggle for us was getting the products into the country. Excuse me, we are not an essential service, so gifting was not prioritized. So we were actually only running with the stock that we had on hand. When we ran out, that's when business got slow for us up until around August, September, when the ports were opening, we could actually get parts. But prior to that, we were struggling. We were only selling what we had on hand. So had we known, we would have bulk stocked. Yeah, bon. We would have gotten more and then more prepared. But none of us, small or big companies, would have foreseen what the pandemic has done actually on all of us.
You've already, you know, highlighted, you know, just now about, you know, the fact that no one could have prepared for any of this, and that's perhaps something that could be seen as a low, and that you think being online is probably going to be something that helps you to thrive in future. From your point of view, what other good has sort of come out of Corona virus, if any?
Okay, like I said, online presence, finding a new way to get exposure for our company. We've linked up with big brands, two brands, so that expanded our market. We took on TikTok as well. It wasn't a thing before the pandemic, but now we've established a whole account there, and it's bringing us a different customer base. Remember? So the importance with COVID is making sure that people know about you. Diversify your service, whatever service you are affording the people. Make sure that you can even do it during a pandemic. If you're a one-trick pony, you're gonna suffer. A lot of companies have closed down because they were only focusing on one thing. We had to do chandeliers. We had to move from only customized watches and wallets when we ran out. We had to think of other things that people can gift or decorate with in-house. We introduced the clocks for the walls. That's what we really learned.
You know, I like the fact that, you know, as a gifting business, you've spoken about bringing in TikTok, because I'm trying to think in my head how exactly you guys are using TikTok. So for people that are, you know, that are listening, how can they find you guys on social media? And if they do come to your TikTok page, what can they expect to see?
Okay, with TikTok, I had to learn this as well. What I do is I searched a trending song and I made a video of what we've done before. So people, when they search a trending song, they would come across one of our videos and they would see the work that has been done. There are prices there. There are different varieties of the products that we offer. On TikTok, it's Teho or Ed Nature. On Facebook, it's Ed Nature Lion Time Pieces. On Instagram, it's Ed Nature Lion Time Pieces. On WhatsApp, it's 083-790-7441. Our website is www.ednature.co.za.
So that's been us with Tekofatso Motswai, who is the co-owner of Urban Nature. They are a business specializing in customized gifts, mainly wallets, wood watches, and sunglasses, giving us some insight on our COVID business watch about running her business through this pandemic. On the other side of this, we continue our conversation around vaccines. This is the Business Buzz.
More justice on the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to continue our show. Remember that you can keep in touch with us during the conversation. You know, what do you think about vaccines? Are you getting vaccinated? Are you an anti-vaxxer? Where do you stand on things like that? On Facebook, we have our FM or Voice of Vits. Our other Facebook page is the Vits Radio Academy. And on Twitter, we're at VowFM. And then our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. It's time for us to continue then. And now we're going to be hearing from Pilani Plongo, who is a fifth-year medical student at Wits University. And, you know, this is someone who's actually had the vaccination, right? This is always fascinating because we talk about the business, we talk about all the issues around it, but then what is the actual process like on the ground? Pilani, good evening to you.
Good evening. How are you doing?
No, doing all right on this end. I think for us, you know, just to get the ball rolling, right, what was the actual experience like when it came to getting vaccinated? You know, did you get sick? Did you have headaches? Did you have to take a day off? Like, what was all of that like?
Okay, so first I want to explain when I got my vaccine. I got vaccinated on the 4th of March this year. The process was straightforward. I applied with the Department of Health, and then I got an SMS that was detailing me how I'm going to proceed with my vaccination. I got vaccinated at Charlotte Maxwell Hospital, and it was actually faster than I thought it would happen. So there, after getting vaccinated, the nurses actually allow you to stay for about 15 minutes when they monitor you if you have any immediate reaction or side effects to the vaccine. And if you don't have any symptoms in 15 minutes, they allow you to let you go. I personally didn't have any symptoms. I just felt a little bit of soreness the way I got the vaccine, which was nothing to me. However, my friends were complaining that they were feeling a little bit tired, but not a major side effect. And I also saw one patient who actually came where I was working for my clinical rotation and said that she actually is a nurse and she got the vaccine, and she felt dizzy as soon as she got the vaccine, and the dizziness was not going away. So, yeah, but that is the only case that I know so far. I didn't get any side effects, and I also haven't heard of any drastic side effects here in South Africa, like any clotting that people have got because of getting the vaccine.
I guess from your point of view then, because of the process you've just walked us through, we also want to get a sense of, did you take a one shot or did you take a two shot?
I took a one shot. The Johnson & Johnson is a one shot vaccine. I think it's the AstraZeneca one that is the one that you have to come again and get a shot. The Johnson & Johnson one is just a one shot vaccine.
Okay.
And I also took one shot.
Now, I like the fact that, you know, there's a couple of things, you know, working for us in this conversation, because on the one hand, you're an actual medical student, so you have science backing up your thoughts around the vaccine. But at the same time, you're someone who's gone through the process. For the people that are still a little bit skeptical out there about efficacy, are my limbs going to fall off, that type of thing, what do you have to say in response?
Okay, I just want to say a few things. Most of the things that people are scared of are things that people read on social media, and those things are posted by people on social media who do not have proof, if I can say that, or any, I can just say proof of what they are saying. They will come with multiple theories. They'll tell you that this vaccine is from the devil, 666. They'll tell you how this is about a new world order, and they'll just post unrelated photos and say these photos are of people who got the vaccine, which is absolutely not true. And people sometimes they believe those things, and they're actually not true. I just want to explain a few things. When a vaccine is created, it is not just like you don't just wake up and say, here is a vaccine, take it. It passes multiple stages. It first, there is a development stage that it has to pass, the preclinical trials, the human trials, the licensing, the manufacturing, and then the distribution at the end. And in all these phases, the vaccine, very serious tests are done to make sure that at least limited side effects can happen due to the vaccine. But the vaccine is tested a lot, and it's not just given out to the people. And I also want to explain a few things. In science, generally, there is no such thing as 100% zero side effects. It's all about risk. You know, I have a friend who is very, very allergic to aspirin, the very same aspirin that you go to the spaza shop and then you buy it. She is very allergic to it, and it can be lethal. My point is that everything in science, whether it is medication, it can have side effects at the end of the day. There is no 100% safe. But it's all about looking at those side effects, how drastic they are, and what is even the probability of those side effects happening. Right now, even this, you know, the vaccine that they stopped the rollout temporarily because it causes, like, those clots. Right now, at this current rate, you still have higher chances of getting clots when you're taking contraceptives, actually, than when you take this vaccine. And it's not only this vaccine only that can give side effects. There are lots of other vaccines out there that can give you side effects, but those side effects are not like scrutinized the way the COVID-19 vaccine side effects are scrutinized. So my point at the end of the day, I just want to say that there is no such thing as 100% safe. Obviously, there will always be side effects, but don't be scared. Look at the probability of those side effects happening before you can even say, no, I'm taking this vaccine or I'm not taking this vaccine. And also look at the risk-to-benefit ratio.
You know, I like the fact that in giving us those very comprehensive and succinct points, because I sort of felt like I was in my high school biology class for a moment there. So really appreciate you just explaining all of those things to us point by point. But before we end off, because you are a medical student, I can imagine that a time like this, going through the pandemic, can either be seen as an amazing opportunity to sort of learn, at least from an epidemiological point of view, you know, about diseases and care. You know, this is really throwing someone into the deep end, right? But at the same time, someone might actually be scared about what it means to be on the front line, even though, you know, you are still a student. So, you know, how have you managed that aspect?
To be in the front line?
Yes.
To be in the front line, it's actually great, of course, because you know that you are in the front line trying to, in the fight against this pandemic that has caused everything to be on the standstill. I was a little bit concerned due to the death rate, which kept on going high, and you know that we've been getting new waves. Like the first wave was, I think, in July last year. The second wave was in January this year, and I think we are going to a third wave. And also, if you remember, like, there is a new variant that was found here in South Africa, and according to reports, that variant was a bit more, had the potential to be more contagious, if I can say. So all those things, of course, they will shaky here and there, but at the end of the day, it's what we signed up for. And given the also the, for the fact that you already have the vaccine, I'm even more confident, and I'm just ready to, and I'm willing to continue fighting the coronavirus. And I'm actually like grateful that a lot of other health workers have been getting the vaccine, and I actually hope that the rest of the population can actually get the vaccine as soon as possible. And I feel like once we all get the vaccine, actually, there's a higher chance for us to for life to go back to normal, because right now we all can agree that life is not normal pre and during the COVID.
Not at all. We are all hoping for that. One quick thing before we go, your thoughts just on the actual rollout, right? Do you, because you are encouraging people to go out and get vaccinated, what have you thought about the rollout so far? So many estimates saying we aren't vaccinating enough people, so many things saying, you know, at the same time, some of the doubts, etc. But the rollout on the ground, your thoughts?
The rollout for us as health students and health science students and health workers, I feel like it was more efficient because obvious we are not as much as the general population. However, I do feel that maybe there will be a little bit of delay when the whole population is being vaccinated. And given the fact that, you know, these things are handled by the government, and a lot of people no longer have faith in the government. But for now, the minister is saying that he's getting ready for the massive rollout of the vaccine, and everything is going to be fine. I hope it is like that. Actually, we will see when it gets there, when like the majority of the population has to get vaccinated. But for now, it's hard to tell if how it's going to happen, and if it's going to happen according to plan, or there will be any delays. But for us right now, for me speaking, right now everything really went fine. And I really hope that it happens like that when the whole population is being vaccinated.
So that's been it. Thank you so much to Pilani Mhlongo, who is a fifth-year medical student at Wits University, giving us his take just around vaccine rollouts, but more importantly, his experience actually getting the vaccine. You know, he said that it was a very simple process. Went, applied with the department, and then he just went and he got his shot. He got the Johnson & Johnson one, and he says that, you know, some initial fears, but, you know, at least, you know, having been a medical student on the front lines going through COVID. But when it comes to the vaccine, he's just saying, guys, the science is backing things up. They wouldn't just be giving, you know, people this thing if it hadn't gone through stages, you know, verification, but also giving us that caveat that, you know, nothing is ever going to have 100% with nothing on the side of side effects. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show.
The Business Buzz.
Thank you so much to everyone who joined in the show. Thank you to our special guests. Thank you to Prof. Jenny earlier on. Thank you so much to Pilani for sharing their insights just around the business of vaccinations, just looking into the economic consequences and considerations when it comes to vaccinating in South Africa. I think, you know, on my end, when someone actually sits down and does the math, the cost of actually vaccinating the whole of South Africa is not that deep when you consider how much money was lost in terms of tax collections last year, sin taxes, especially sin taxes on alcohol and tobacco just because of the lockdown, right? And just by calculations, I think I once ran a simple back of the napkin type of calculations, and I think I calculated that it would cost South Africa about 20 or so billion rand to vaccinate the whole country. But that was sort of based on preliminary prices that had been given out about the different vaccines that are out there. And when you consider how much debt an organization like Eskom has, and when you think about things like that, then it sort of makes sense that the country could probably afford to do vaccinations for free, sort of as they have been. But the point that the prof was making earlier on is very important, that in divvying out the scarce resources of the country, it's very important for policymakers to make decisions that are going to benefit the country as a whole. If you're if you're someone who's gonna go and get vaccinated, you know, more power to you. If not, then you know, people's feelings are valid about all of these things. If you're waiting to see, you know, how things go, I completely understand how things are. But just with the way that things are going, in the same way that we see flights and travel to places like East Africa being dependent on getting a vaccine, it's very likely that the so-called vaccine passports are going to be a key way that people are traveling in and around the world. So vaccines, they're here to stay, and we're just going to see how those rollouts actually happen. So that's been it for today. Thank you so much to everyone who's been listening. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on Facebook. We are VOFM or Voice of Wits. Our other Facebook page is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VOFM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Remember that you can find our great content on vits.journalism.co.za/business. So with that, we've reached the end of tonight's show. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutlwano Serame, together with our producer, that is Gloria Mabuza, as well as Slin Lemusibi, Tando Qimba, together with Siyabonga Mota. Don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that down. There's more great content coming up on the VAL FM lineup. We've got Noni Kumalo coming up next with Love Good Music. So from myself, Mudio Mob, Justice Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it is take care.
The Business Buzz with Mudiwa Mob Justice Gavaza. The Business Buzz Podcast.